Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
It's time to go one-on-one with DP. Coming at you live from the Koppel Chevrolet GMC Studios, here is your host, Derek Pearson. Brought to you by Mary Ellen's Food for the Soul on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome to it on a Monday night, and Monday night in Lincoln, Nebraska. 93.7 The Ticket, DP. Harrison Arns manning the board. We have a very special one-on-one, looking forward to it. Introducing him is lame. Let's bring him in the proper way. Harrison Arns.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
Yeah, you have to get all that. You have to get all that. Coach Barry Thompson, Fairfax Football Academy. BT, what's happening, baby?
What is up, DP? Got a heat wave. Hot, baby.
What's give me a number for DC today. I'll give you Nebraska's number.
We were cool today. It was we had more that last couple days that feels like temp, and you know, of course, we were on the turf, was up past 100 for a couple of the sessions, so it was hot.
It was hot. We're at 104.
Ooh.
104 is what they're doing, and you know, they start having these conversations with folks about hey, just take care of yourself. Just take care of yourself. And then you go, Mother Nature's stronger than we are. Hopefully, with getting young folks and parents, trying to get them to handle their business.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that time, bro. It is that time.
It is. The biggest thing I find out this time of year working with young guys is it is important to get them out in a sensible fashion, to get them acclimated. A lot of times, the guys that are transitioning from 12 to 13, that age, they still eat like they were 10. And they wake up and their body's calling for stuff and it doesn't work out really well. So it's an important lesson to learn for young athletes to, within reason, get outside in this weather 15, 20 minutes.
Well, I mean, but let's go through it. What is that thing, right? What is that thing that parents need to know, players need to know about doing what they should do before they get out into this weather? And that'll be the theme for the day, because we'll get into the things they should be doing right about now, preparing themselves for a season. But in this hot season, we're working with, you know, it's improvement season. It's not off season.
Yeah.
Improvement season. And folks need to get better, but you can't go out and be better in this sort of weather without preparation. So what do you suggest for young athletes and for parents to know about going out in this 100 degree weather?
Well, it's all the things that people know. You're supposed to eat well. You're supposed to hydrate. I think people, as much as hydration is talked about, I still don't know that folks really, really understand how important it is, not only to performance, but to injury prevention. I was coaching in a high school that was ranked 44th in the nation, and all their players were in that program. They called the hydration, they called it prehab, because they understood that hydration, not only this, the thirst thing, but it actually affected performance and it impacted their ability to stay healthy. I think when we were at Woodson, there was a young lady there. One time, Ms. Fickus, I went in that room and I was surprised at how full it was. And I said, what's going on? And she just looked at me and said, you know, about 70% of what I see as a trainer is related to hydration. So hydrating, understanding that young people do not drink as much as they should. Study after study shows that. One of the things I make nearly mandatory, as much as you can get, is I make all of my athletes from 10 years old and up bring a minimum of 64 ounces. And they bring a small bottle, I call them out for it. I want a minimum of 64 ounces. And I just explain to them, you're probably not going to drink that in a 60-minute workout. But when you're done, what's the first thing you're going to reach for? And they go, the water. I go, then that's a good thing. So bring 64. They get up around 12. I start mandating 120 ounces. And for me, it's year-round. The other thing you don't understand is your body has to work even harder when the weather's cold to regulate. So you have an internal temperature and external temperature. In the summer, you have sweat, which will help you with the external. But in the winter, you don't have that. That's why you see athletes sometimes in a cold game cramp up. They're not hydrated. The other thing is, how do you fuel your body, right? What type of breakfast do you eat? You want light on the dairy products. They're kind of hard to digest. You want more of the fruit, the lean proteins and things like that. Things that when your body starts to call on it for fuel, your body can respond with the right thing. Not eating a breakfast is not a good thing. You know, stuffing a chimichanga down your mouth and going out is not a good thing. So those are the things. And then the last thing is, you have to get out in the weather. You don't have to be crazy. You know, if it's going to get up to 100 around 1 o'clock, it's still good to get out at maybe 9 o'clock and get outside for 15 or 20 minutes. Don't have to run a marathon, but just get outside. Get yourself acclimated to the weather as it's changing. And by the way, as hot as it is right now, it's not going to become less August as we go along. So you need to get used to it.
Through some of this, what you just mentioned, and Fickus was in, she was in studio about a month ago. She was stopping in for a holiday. Mm-hmm. She brought her little ones in and came and hung out for a bit. It's always good to see her. Trainers are important in this thing, and sometimes there is a conflict. Sometimes there's a friction between what the parent thinks it knows and what the trainer has been trained to teach. And then coaches.
Yes.
How do we maneuver that conversation between what the different known resource says and what's expected?
I think that's an impossible triangle to balance if it has tension in it. So I like the model that they had at Fairfax, which was that any one of the three in that triangle could veto. So they gave them equal power. And so that way you didn't have anybody fighting anybody, right? But anybody could veto. So if a parent didn't think the trainer and the coach were doing right, the parent could veto. You know, if the trainer thought that the coach and the parent went after it, the trainer could veto. I really like that system that they had. You give them equal power. And if somebody in that triangle feels funny about it, that somebody's not looking out for the best interest, they could veto it. And I think that's a pretty good one. But you need communication between all three, right? To understand what's going on, how things are done. We talk a lot about vacuums. So I'll put a lot of responsibility that at the coach. The coach can, at the beginning, say what the trainer does or says, that goes. So that takes care of the players, the trainer's position with the players, right? And then the only things left are the parents. And I think, again, that's the coach's responsibility to communicate to the parents, this is how we handle these things. We have a trained person over here. If this is diagnosed, they take care of it. I don't have anything to do with it until that person tells me it's okay. That would calm a lot of nerves with a lot of parents.
In the communication that needs to take place, you taught me a thing that we have to respond to parents and students and administrators in the way that they're used to communicating.
Yes, yes, yes.
Not everybody is text-based. Not everybody's phone call-based. Not everybody's email-based. How do you maneuver that? Because we'll get into the five things. But
yeah,
that communication aspect of it is vital. And then it also there also has to be some connection between the different tentacles to this thing, to the different fence posts, that you can stand in the middle of the yard and yell. It may not reach the corners of the parents, administrators, student athletes, et cetera.
Right.
How should that communication be handled? Is that one that you go to them and say, what's your favorite way? Or is it a matter of training them to receive how you ship, how you send information?
I think it's all that, but it starts with, and this is where we first started talking about vacuums, right? Yeah. So I just have a theory, particularly at the high school level and down. You know, I've never been a college coach, although I know college coaches are increasingly being approached with things with parents involved. And I think eventually they have to do this too. But certainly high school on down, what I had said, and we had this discussion, we said that vacuums don't exist in reality, that if you have a pocket of information that needs to be filled up, or like a tube that needs to be filled up with information, if it's empty, it's going to get filled up, and it will get filled up anyway. It'll just get filled up because it's empty. People will say, hey, that's empty, let's fill it up. And when you're running a program, if it has something to do with your program, parents and players will fill that tube up, and it doesn't necessarily reflect. So as a program head, and my experience from high school and down, you better be keenly aware of the information that the parents are going to be seeking and get out in front of that and kind of communicate that position. A large part of it is just communicating to parents about how you're going to go about doing things. Not everything, but just in general. This is what we do. This is why we're doing it. You know, that something's going to come up about playing time. One of the best descriptions I ever heard was a coach said, by the end of August, all the players that he had, he knew that they knew that there were two things on the team. There were positions and there were roles. And by the time they ended that August practice, every player on that team knew their position and knew their role. So that if a parent came up and said, yes, he doesn't have a playing position, but here's his role on the team, and define that. And I think however you get there, communicating those types of things to parents makes things more understandable. I'll tell you something else I saw recently I thought was pretty good. I know high schools are kind of loath of this, but you and I, this would fit us. This coach didn't have a depth chart. He had a rep chart. Mm-hmm. He had a rep chart, right? So these are the reps that you're getting in practice. This guy gets 4, you get 3, you get 2, you get 1. That's great. Now, can you explain to the guy that has 1 what it is he needs to do to get more? I think that's a wonderful thing. Now you've got a kid who clearly understands, I've got these clear markers, I'm getting feedback on what I'm doing, I'm not doing, and I'm going to fight to get 2 reps. I'm going to fight to get 3 reps. I'm going to fight to get up there to get 4, right? Where am I on the rep chart? Don't need to see a chart. You know what happens in practice every day. So things like that that are just thought through in a coherent manner make everything clear for coaches, parents, and players.
Barry, this is that's there's so much in that, and I'm going to keep staying on the thread because yeah. You just mentioned a thing that in knowing what the roles were, position, depth chart, etc.
Right.
But we figured out pretty early on that competition. That if you had, you know, with basketball, if you had 15 players in 3 groups of 5, that everybody got run.
Right.
And that those moments that we could coach and train in those moments as they competed, then the players never had question about why they were second with the second 5 or third 5 or first 5. It always showed up in the competition. And in football, even if we put 1s versus 2s, we often put 1s and 2s versus 1s versus 1s and 2s so that they could compete.
Yes.
Like, why is that so complicated for coaches?
Well, I can't speak for everybody, DP, you know that. But no, but you one part that you're kind of leaving out, that when we were talking to players about in the basketball sense, we also defined for them that when they got minutes, that they had to honor the minutes. And we defined for them what honoring the minutes meant, giving them marching orders. So in a basketball sense, I think we described like eight things for them, and none of them had to do with scoring the ball.
Right.
So if you do get in the game and you're doing these eight things, then that's honoring your minutes, right? And that's something that a player, if it's clearly defined, he can go back to a parent. The parent said, well, you didn't score tonight. And he says, yeah, but I did these things, right? And these are the things that coach said he needed to see me to do, those types of things. So I think that that clear communication, a clear understanding of the direction that things need to move, just helps everybody.
There's so much to this, and this is why we always say that in these conversations with Barry, we're kind of all over the place. He had some space that he wanted to start in, but I knew that with one question, we end up with four other questions, and that's probably why we tend to work things out and having these conversations. But we're at that time of year where it's what high school quarterbacks should be doing.
Right.
This time of year. So right now, is your if you're plus 30 days, plus 45 days, plus 60 days, depending on where you are in the country and what you're going to try to do. And some of that falls in line with college quarterbacks, pro quarterbacks. We're even having this discussion about their timetable, what they should be working on, what they should be fixing, what they should be building up, and then what they should be focused on. So, Barry, it's the five things that every high school quarterback should be doing right about now. Where do you want to start?
Well, I'll just list them and then you can pick them apart. We don't have to talk about them all, or you can take our conversations the way they normally go. But what I was focused on is the five things that I think high school quarterbacks should be doing off the field. Everybody kind of takes care of the weight training and the lifting and the running and, you know, even the extra throwing. That stuff gets taken care of pretty well. But what gets missed are the things that you should be doing off the field. So these are my five. One is you should be taking care of your mechanics and your footwork, both for the pass and the run game. Two, you should begin to understand your offense by personnel groupings, because that's how the defense understands your groupings. And we can dive into that. And then three, you should start to understand defenses on a very basic level, that there's three different levels to the defense. The defensive line, what I call the underneath coverage and the deep coverage. And you need to start understanding your pass concepts in terms of, is it attacking the underneath coverage or is it attacking the deep coverage? Four, you need to write it down. And there's a great product, and I'll mention it, Always Grind. It's a great way to write things down and keep things organized. And then five, you have to develop your huddle skill. Your huddle skill is what makes all of this easy. And easy to study and refer back to. When you combine these things, these are the type of reps that you can never get enough of on a football field, and you can never get enough of in a game. And so when you do this, it's really important. And I just want to add one thing before we talk about them individually. This writing a book, a lot of high schools have common opponents. For instance, at W&L, they're on the second year of a two-year schedule. So the W&L quarterbacks can go write down every one of their opponents and start to make a book on the defenses that they'll play in the way that I'm talking about. And they can set that book aside and kind of refer to it from time to time. But when they get into game week against Annandale, it won't be the first time this quarterback's seeing that defense. And because he's explored it a little bit, now, as game week comes in, there's two things that can happen. He can start to really bury or dig in on details. And two, he can start to understand why the coach wants to run certain plays against that defense. And all that adds up to a better season. So that's my five things that I think all quarterbacks should be doing.
Let's start with the last, because knowledge, especially in sports, sometimes gets buried as experience. But my thing, knowledge is being comfortable in knowing the space that you're in, what you're going to be asked, and what you expect to see.
Right?
That a quarterback in that space works from a different kind of knowledge than everybody else on the field. And then it requires that that quarterback share that knowledge. And if the quarterback doesn't know, the quarterback, this is the part that the folks miss it.
Yeah.
if the quarterback doesn't know what everybody else is supposed to be doing,
yeah,
and what he's going to do when they get a reaction,
right?
That offense, that team is in trouble.
Let me give you an example, DP, of two things. So let's say that we have a formation called the ticket, and the ticket is a 2x2 formation, and the two inside receivers are going to be up on the line of scrimmage, and the two outside are going to be off. We call this formation ticket, and we have a play called 93.7. And in 93.7, the receiver to my left, the one that's up on the line, the number two receiver, is going to run a corner pattern. And the receiver, the number two receiver on my right, is going to run a post. Well, that pattern clearly attacks the deep part of the coverage. So it tells me I need to start with one of those safeties. So which one? Well, if I start with the one on my left and he takes that corner pattern, I know there's a whole lot of space to complete the post. So now I know this is a deep pattern. This is where I want to start. You run a different scenario. So now there's only one safety in the middle. Well, I know the safety can't make it to the corner pattern, but who's the guy I have to watch? Well, now it's the corner because he knows that safety is going to need a lot of help. He's more apt to kind of sag back on that corner pattern and give me the shorter pattern. The post more or less is off, right? Then you need to take that. So now I understand where it attacks. Then you have to put that play into different down distance time and score scenarios. All right, I've got the ticket. We call 93.7. There are maybe 10 seconds to go in the game. This is the call that comes in. I've got one safety in the middle. I need a first down. We're 3rd and 5. Well, now I'm really playing. I'm hoping that the corner takes the corner route, because what I really want to do is get the ball to my short route on the left-hand side so that he can get out of bounds and preserve some time on the clock, right? So working through those formations or those kind of situations is what a quarterback needs to do now. If he's in high school, his schedule is as relaxed as it's going to be for the rest of the year, and he needs to take advantage of those things and can play them out. And so when he gets on the field, it won't be the first time that he's seen them.
And Barry, the knowledge of that is explaining to the wide receivers why the quarterback's making the choices he's making. So they know what to look for. Mm-hmm. They know what to look for. They don't guess that, oh, this is a partnership.
That's right.
I have to do my job. I have to be on time. I can't run into a defender, another defender into that space. I can't tiptoe through a route and right. give that other safety an opportunity to kind of stay and mess everything up.
Right.
And the offensive line to know exactly how much time a quarterback's going to need.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Need to make this throw.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And that communication, the fact that it's being communicated to a high school quarterback is exactly what the high school quarterback needs. And mm-hmm. it's exactly what the receivers need. It's exactly what the offensive line needs. And then from a coaching standpoint, if you have given those details to your quarterback reacts rather than thinks.
Yeah. And you need everything you just explained, there's a lot of coaches that can explain that, but you've got to create the space to give repetitions to that. So when you're scripting out practice, right, and you've got to think of situations, hey, they run this play pretty good. As I'm working with the DC here, I'm going to make this ticket 93.7 call, and I want the DC to give me a tough look, right? And now I throw up the situation for the quarterback. So I have a segment that's third and five, and I say there's 10 seconds left, and we need a first down, right? And so you can talk to them intellectually about it, but then they need those repetitions and practice to get good at it if it's something that you think come up. But devoid of that, the quarterback can get around a lot of that by doing the things that we're talking about, understanding personnel groupings, understanding where his pass concepts are attacking, writing things down, making a book right now on your common opponents. You know your district opponents are going to be the same, right? So even your schedule change. And you could argue, well, you know, maybe a team changes defensive coordinator. Okay. But if I'm looking at 10 high school defenses, I promise you that one team that gets a new DC, his defense isn't going to be much different than the other nine that I'm taking a look at. So even it helps me in that case as well.
Yeah, better not. You're going to feed up on it. BT, we're going to start the break. We'll come back. We'll get back into the list of five because there's a lot of golden nuggets out there that we need to share with folks. DP, Barry Thompson here on One-on-One on the Ticket.
You're listening to One-on-One with DP, sponsored by Mary Ellen's Food for the Soul on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, One-on-One. Fairfax Football Academy's Barry Thompson, QB coach extraordinaire, great human as well. BT, we're going through the list. Let's go. Let's start with the first thing you mentioned because there's some depth in it. And give the folks the first one because the way you verbalized it sets up a great response to it.
Yes, that's extremely important. We're talking about off the field things that quarterbacks can do. One of the most important one is to really batten down your mechanics and your footwork in the pass game and your footwork, particularly specifically in the run game. The run game has timing just like the pass game does. Most high school programs are probably going to run the ball more than they pass it. So the better your timing and ball handling and everything is in the run game, the smoother things are going to go. Quarterbacks need to understand what the midline is. They don't understand it when it comes to the run game and particularly the pass game. So I'm going to ask your listeners to just imagine that they're standing behind a quarterback and the quarterbacks are straddling a line, one of the yard lines, and it's running straight down the center of their body back to where you're observing. If you watch a lot of quarterbacks start to take a three-step drop, that right foot, if they're right-handed, will zig all the way to the left. Then they'll cross over, it will zig all the way back to the right, and then the third step will be down the line. The problem with that is that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, and what I just drew up is not a straight line. And a quarterback who does that does two things. One, he can really affect his protection because when he takes that step that takes him all the way to the left, he's getting behind the guard who thinks it's okay to let that person go by to his left. And then two, he's taking longer to set up. And so the coach says, get the ball out faster. Well, clean up your drop. Learn how to anchor your drop. Also, when it comes to protection, the depth of your drop has to be consistent. In most pass protections, the center and the two guards are responsible for setting the depth of the pocket, and the tackles are responsible for setting the width. So if I'm a tackle and I've got this wide technique out here, I learn through repetitions, if you're exactly 5 yards from the ball of scrimmage, of where I can set up that if this guy wants to get to you, he either has to come right through me or run past me. Running past me is okay. If he wants to get in front of me, I got a little bit of time. I don't have to rush, and I can squeeze the pocket, right, if I'm in the right spot. But if one time you're dropping at five and the next time you're at 3.5, all of a sudden this guy that takes an inside move I think I have control over, he flies past me and there's a sack. So being precise with your footwork and both the pass and run game, extremely important. You can get many more of those repetitions done without a ball in your hand, right, than you can on the field. And then mechanically, whatever your mechanics are, you can get many more perfect repetitions of your mechanics without the ball in your hand or without throwing the ball. You look at Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Outliers, The Power of Perfect Repetition. So those, from that standpoint, that's a big thing that quarterbacks need to do off the field.
Barry, so much of the footwork conversation, especially on the high school level, again, mom, dad, sons, daughters, whoever's playing the position at whatever level, that sometimes we get caught up in the image of what it's supposed to look like rather than the functionality of what it's supposed to look like.
Right.
And they all want a copy. Remember, there was a stretch where everybody wanted to copy Peyton Manning's footwork, not understanding that Peyton Manning's footwork was based on the fact that he had tree trunk legs and a rifle arm. He could make up for it with fewer steps, and it wasn't. It's not the same. Yeah. But as Kendrick says, not like us.
Right.
That thing exists. So how do you determine? And oftentimes, the difference. I played with four really good quarterbacks in high school, fortunately. So I played with Steve Cox, Barry Thompson, Jim Daly, who played at VMI, and Win McNamee. And of those guys, none of them were the same kind of athlete. Barry was the best runner, the best thrower, but Barry's steps were defined. They were finite. Jim Daly, very finite, but Jim Daly was 6'3" and a half, so his steps were a little different. I would meet him at different places than I would meet Barry, and we had to do that through repetition, and that difference maker was done away from the team. We had to make that. We had to make time to fix the things that need to be fixed.
Right, and I think – you know, the cones and the hurdles are good. You know, I use them in our training, but the cones and the hurdles don't. I think the best thing, DP, what quarterbacks off the field need to understand is a drill is what you're going to be asked to do. And that's what needs to be practiced, is what you're going to be asked to do. So as a quarterback, if I'm going to be asked to hand off, right, I want my feet to be precise to help the running back, to help you know, the timing of the blocks. If I'm going to drop back, I want to be as efficient as I can getting to the point where I can throw. And then mechanically, I want to be as efficient as I can as I throw the ball. So those sound like simple things, but they take a specific practice. And that's not the practice that most high school goes out where they throw the ball for an hour and a half and they're just throwing with their guys and they consider it work. Yes, that's good work. But, man, if you want to get all the crumbs on the table, you know, tune into one and start doing those things off the field. It's what we call lonely work. There's nobody around. There's nothing sexy about it. It's not necessarily fun. But, boy, is the squeeze worth the juice.
Well, Barry, that leads into that sometimes this time of year, away from the game, you can do it in the backyard. As a matter of fact, most really good quarterbacks I know did it around the house.
Yes.
Right. You would maneuver and you'd say, okay, footwork, hips.
Yeah.
Eyes in the right place. Let me get the shoulder turk. I don't have to make the throw.
Right.
But I can get those footsteps in play. Another big thing of things that can be done on their own time is watching themselves.
Yes.
Like seeing the work. Like in today's age, with cell phones and cameras, they can go do those drills and get so much smarter by watching themselves than they can be just out playing catch with their buddies.
We do that. So we have, for our mechanics, we teach mechanics a certain way. And, you know, with forever and a day, guys are always talking about quarterbacks' elbows, right? You know, it's too low and high. So I stole a drill a long time ago from NFA, Darren Slack. It's called a hanger drill. I got it off the back of a CD. That's how long ago it was.
How about that?
But we give our quarterbacks this hanger drill, and the hanger drill, through the way it's shaped, it tells them exactly, are they doing everything exactly right with their arm motion, getting the elbow in the spot. And I will actually record them in perfect positions after I teach them the hanger drill and then stitch those photos together. And so they have their own video of them doing it. And then I also give them a video of some of our other guys who do it really well. So they have the two to study, right? They can look at somebody who's a Division I, like Daniel Posky, who's at University of Delaware, watch him do that hanger drill. They can see themselves doing the hanger drill. And then so I kind of try to coach them as, you know, not, I just don't say practice off the field, but here's what I need you to do off the field. And that's why I was bringing up the 5 points. I'm not going to just say do these things, but here's what you need to do.
Through all of it, right, is giving work. Mm-hmm. Giving work that if they can see the results, young people repeat those.
Yes.
If they're not seeing results, they're right. going to question you. They'll do it begrudgingly. They'll do it halfway. Mm-hmm. And we know this. How do you show them results? What are the things that you do in this five that, I mean, is this the footwork? Is this upper body work? Is this rest, recovery, taking right. care of the arm? What is it that allows them to see some actual results so they'll move accordingly?
Well, I always start with mechanics when I have a quarterback, right? He's new to me. I want to watch him throw, and we start there. And that, for me, the way we teach it is it lets them immediately kind of feel like, oh, boy, you know. And I joke with them as they're kind of getting the hang of it. I say, hey, how does it feel to know where the ball's going? And they laugh. They laugh,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Because they laugh, and they go, coach, this feels great. So that kind of sets up everything else that comes after that, because we do have a way, thanks to Dr. Tom House, of teaching, you know, shoulder, foot strike, hip, elbow, throw. It's a rotational sequence that all athletes use, and it's what I teach, and it's productive. The other things that encourages them to go follow the other marching orders, right? Like I said, another thing is to understand your formations by personnel group. It's real important because that's how your opponent looks at you, the defense. They look at you as that 10 personnel, 11 personnel, or 12 personnel. And just to break it down for everybody, personnel is the first number is the number of running backs in the game. The second number is the number of attached tight ends in the game. So if we have 10 personnel, that's one running back, no attached tight ends, and four wide receivers. And you would literally write it down that way. The next one is, say, let's call it 11 personnel. We have one running back, one tight end, and three receivers in the game. Now, just looking at that, you have four cheetahs in the game, or you have three pretty fast guys in the game. Just intellectually, you would understand if I'm a defense, I'm going to defend differently against 10 personnel than I would against 11 personnel, because now I got an extra blocker for a run threat. So if you go down through your formations and categorize them like that, and just look at how your opponents line up against 10 and look at how your opponents line up against 11, you're going to see a lot of commonality. And then doing that thing that we talked about, is this attacking the underneath or the deep coverage? And you'll begin to understand why certain plays come in at certain formations, right? Now we're playing football, DP. You understand? Now we're getting somewhere. We're beginning to understand our defense. We understand the offense, and then we're understanding the defense a little bit better. It's not just a blur to us. And now we're getting to the point where we're beginning to understand football. Things slow down. We know where we're going. We know situations. And then the last thing is you got to write this stuff down, right? Look at videos. That's fine. Here's what I say to my guys. You have to get in the habit of doing the ordinary extra. Sold that from Kenny Smith, right? Do the ordinary extra. It is fine to look at videos. The extra would be that you break down your formations by personnel. The extra would be is that you would write it down, right? You can have any old notebook you want to. And I'll mention them one more time. I think Always Grind has a great product that has 5 different sections in it, including a specific section for watching film. You can find them on Instagram. I endorse the product because we give it to all our trainees. We give it out to our guys in our passing camp. And I give it to the quarterbacks we're working with. And it's got, I don't know if you've seen it, DP. It's got 2 sections in there you and I are going to love. It has a month-to-month calendar. And it also has a practice focus sheet. And what am I doing at practice every day? How did I get? So it's a real good product. I recommend it to everybody.
It's what am I working on today? What am
yeah.
I working on today?
Yeah.
What am I going to get better at today?
Yeah. And coach. Yeah, and coach, evaluate yourself. Did I do it? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's and here's the part, and we'll go into it in the final segment.
Okay.
But it's usually the people who work on the things that they're not good at in the offseason who improve during the season. We'll talk about that with Barry Thompson here on One-on-One on the Ticket.
You're listening to One-on-One with DP, sponsored by Mary Ellen's Food for the Soul on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
final segment with Barry Thompson before we have another member of the DMV club.
Good morning, sir.
Personnel with Don't Punt Hour immediately following. Of course, Speed Power with Megan Walker. We've got a full night for you here on the ticket. And then, of course, what's brewing with Chancellor mm-hmm. Brewington. So some pretty good programming on a ticket weeknight. Barry Thompson, you sent me a thing. I wanted to ask you about it because in this thing, they were comparing quarterbacks. And they do this thing where they will take the stats of two quarterbacks and show you the stats without showing you who the people are to get your response and reaction to the stats. And they picked two quarterbacks. And in this particular case, they showed two of the best 10 quarterbacks in pro football, showing their last 50 starts. And the numbers look remarkably the same. And I think we get caught up too often in the numbers because ultimately there's a bigger prize. But the process is the process. So, Barry, in determining quarterback play, what are the numbers that matter most, kind sir?
Is it
wins and losses, TD passes?
Let me stop right there.
Yeah.
The quarterback's number one job is to win a football game. That is his number one job.
That's it.
And everything that we talked about is him preparing, offering maximum preparation to develop the ability in a lot of different situations to help his team do exactly that. Mm-hmm. Win the game.
So in this, it showed the last 50 starts for Dak Prescott and Patrick Mahomes. And the statement is that, well, the numbers are identical. But I think that shows a lack of focus. Something's missing. And they are not the same.
Right.
Because situation and circumstance, what's asked of one is not what's asked of the other. And it can equally say that what Patrick Mahomes does under crisis is why he's Patrick Mahomes. And what Dak Prescott does under crisis is why he is Dak Prescott. And here's the thing. I'm not a Dak hater like some folks are. I think that he happens to play for an evil empire. But the the reality is, right, like it's a thing, right? We just go, right. Okay, listen, I get you play for the Cowboys. But the reality is, in regular season, Dak is Dak. We know what we're getting. And the real issue might be what we ask him to do under crisis.
Fair? DP, he's the second Dallas Cowboy that has the same affliction. There was another QB that was really good,
uh-huh.
had a similar affliction to Dak. So, like I always said, it matters the environment that you put around the quarterback and what are you, again, what you're asking them to do, right? There was another guy that, you know, ran it up too in Dallas, right? But had a problem in certain games, yes?
Yep.
Talented dude, smart guy.
Yeah.
You know?
He did well.
Yeah, he did.
he did well. And then there was another clip that was shared that talked about evaluating. There are some coaches around the country, college and high school coaches,
right,
that are so tuned into, I don't want to call them details.
Not details. It's hand size and how long his arms are and this and that. And it's like just cutting, thinking that they're doing something, that some kid can't make it because his arm is an inch shorter than the arm that they're looking for. And not evaluate. Here's what I say, DP. I've said this before. The evaluation language and the championship language are two different things.
Yeah.
Right? You don't talk about, you know, Cooper Kupp's arm length or hand size. You don't talk about, you know, whoever you think is preeminent. When you talk about them in terms of championships and winning a long career, they don't talk about Michael Strahan's 40. They don't talk about anybody that you think of. They don't talk about Dave Remington's, spin rate and when he snapped the ball. But this evaluation language and the championship language, that kind of disparity is always going to leave room for some really smart coaches to find some players that can ball and put them together and go win. But it kind of sickens me a little bit that this evaluation language has nothing to do in many respects with can a guy play? And more importantly, can he help your team win?
Yeah, that part. I'll close it with this, Barry. I am starting a petition to add a sixth star. A sixth star to recruiting.
All right.
And then I'll have to add a seven. Because the two things that they have not figured out how to measure that may be the most important is IQ and heart.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And if you if you talking to me about stars, but you're not talking about those two things, miss me.
Joe, I know it's almost time to go, but we heard a very wise coach very simply say, I want players who care. How about that? I just want players who care about what they're doing. I can work with those dudes.
Yeah. Listen, the fact that you care means that you will be you are holding yourself accountable for it because your happiness matters.
Yeah.
Your happiness matters. And you know you feel better when you put in the work. Barry Thompson, thank you once again. We'll do it again next Monday night here on One on One. Appreciate you, brother.
Peace.
Yes, sir. That's BT again. DPE, DeMornay Pearsonell, up next here on 93.7 The Team.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.